The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for Resident Evil from 2002. If you do not wish to have this movie spoiled, please watch this movie before listening to the following podcast. Is it a good computer game to movie translation, or just plain evil? We watched Resident Evil from 2002 to see if it was redeemable. Were we successful? Find out after the theme.
Good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Welcome to the Rufus Project Redeeming Features cast, this time looking at the 2002 adaptation of Resident Evil. I am your host, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by my good friend and co-host...
Christian Fletcher. Thanks, Trevor. It's actually always surprising that I want to come back, actually, after half the movie we've been watching recently. So thanks for welcoming me back for another good/bad, depending on what your view is, movie.
Yeah, we're not doing too well this year so far, I've noticed. I think we really need to hit a few redeemables in a row, I think, to help lift the mood and take us to, I suppose, a more positive place. But you know what? We just got to do what we do, and we'll see what we come out with. So I wonder if maybe this can be the one.
Never know. So Resident Evil from 2002. Wow. So, well, you might be coming in at a sort of with a bit more knowledge, I suppose, with the video games and a bit more of a background about the movie. But I'm going into this completely having known nothing about the series. I know a lot of people always request, I think it was the third one or one of the films, not the first one, for screenings, and I've never done one in the past, but a lot of people have asked for things. So I was interested to see what this series was all about, having never seen any of the movies, only pretty much told this was a post-apocalyptic zombie series, possibly. So that's where I'm coming in, completely blind. So I'm hoping you'll enlighten me a little bit too, Trevor.
Fair enough. Well, if you don't know what the movie Resident Evil is about, the synopsis is a special military unit fights a powerful, out-of-control supercomputer and hundreds of scientists who have mutated into flesh-eating creatures after a laboratory accident. That's the official description. Do you think it's accurate?
Yeah, I guess to the point. And to be honest, with the lot that was going on in this movie, I almost needed that sort of plot reference to say, what the hell's kind of going on? I kind of was straying a little bit. Oh, that's right, get me back into it again. So yeah, I think that sums it up perfectly, Trevor, and it would have been nice if I read that synopsis before going in. It would have given me a bit more of information. But yeah, that sums it up perfectly.
Oh, that's actually something which is reassuring. A description that accurate, which isn't always guaranteed with some of these movies. And of course, before we get into it, I think we need to talk a little turkey trivia.
Gobble, gobble.
Gobble, gobble, indeed. And so, first of all, turkey. Talking about this turkey. and the facts, it's actually rated 6.7 out of 10 on IMDb, so that's quite high, really, for most of the movies that we look at here. It had a budget of $33 million, and it ended up grossing about $102,400,000 worldwide. So, I was convinced it was a bomb. I know it was critically lambasted. Like, the critics hated this movie when it came out. And I think maybe that gross maybe came over a more extended period of time. I don't think it was definitely a blockbuster when it came out. But, you know, I was quite surprised by that return when I read it. I'd always considered that this one didn't really have that much of a success.
And I think the thing is, I've so, you know, knowing nothing about it, as mentioned, it's the ones, you know, the Resident Evil with the subtitle. It's those sort of, it's the sequel essentially that I have heard about or know about. I never hear reference to the first movie in particular, so it was quite strange. Yeah, when you mentioned the box office for that, so that was quite reasonable. But that would have been coming quite off the success, I suppose, of the video game, which I assume was quite successful in the years leading up to that.
Yeah, it was a bit of a cult hit, I suppose. It was a popular series, wasn't one of the big blockbuster ones, but it certainly had a very solid following. Probably because when it came out, there wasn't much in the way of zombie survival horror that that catered for the newer generations at the time, being the super powerful PlayStation 1 when that first came out, with its rather blocky graphics and multimedia off the CD. But, I mean, I suppose that probably is a nice tie-in with the trivia. I mean, it is based off a game from the old early PlayStation. I think even Nintendo 64, I think, had a version. It may have come out on the Sega Dreamcast. It was around that time, around that generation of consoles where we were flipping from cartridges to CDs in a big bad way.
Well, it's good to see that it's still got a movie adaptation, because I suppose this would have been sort of post Double Dragon and all these other sort of movies that we have actually looked at. And so I suppose them to taking another risk with a video game franchise or a video game movie was probably, I don't know, a big deal at the time.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, Michelle Rodriguez, who has a role in this movie, apparently she had informed her agent that if anyone ever wrote a script about Resident Evil, she wanted to be a part of it. So as soon as her agent found out that Paul W.S. Anderson had the screenplay, he put Michelle Rodriguez straight onto him.
She would have loved that. I thought you were going to say she'd kill anybody that made a movie of it and somehow got roped into doing it. But yeah, kind of interesting considering her fate in the movie, I suppose. But was to say, yeah, it took me a while because obviously she's a bit more prominent recently, but in being in movies. But it took me actually a while to realise. But the whole time I'm like, I know that face. And then yeah, Michelle Rodriguez. So and Mila Jovovich, I assume. Like, I'm trying to think back. God, I know she was big in Was it Dazed and Confused in the 90s. I don't see that. I think this probably would have been a real reinvention for her career.
Well, I think like her breakthrough role, I think it was really The Fifth Element.
Oh, that's right. That was I think 1998, if memory.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, so I think she'd made her chops as a bit of a sci-fi actress. But another trivia I saw was that the role of Alice, you'd actually find her name until you see the closing credits. I never say her name in the movie. But it was originally going to Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Oh gosh. I mean, I suppose she was a favourite around that time for certain, mm-hmm. you know, for those sort of action sort of movies. But, oh, I'm glad they went with the choice. Because weren't you saying that Mila Jovovich is married to Paul Anderson? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, yeah, they are married. And like, I'd always thought, as another thing that, one of my misconceptions, this is going to be a bit about my misconceptions about the movies. I always thought that, like, the whole Resident Evil series was focusing on Paul Anderson going, hey, I'm married to Mila Jovovich. Isn't she hot? But apparently they didn't actually get married until a year after this movie was made.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So,
maybe every subsequent movie then was him saying, look who I've got here.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then based off the box office, though, yeah, it was encouraging for them to want to continue because, you know, the first one made money. So, but you were saying, you know, sort of, the whole, well, you didn't say it in these words, but to paraphrase, the whole contemporary sort of zombie movie sort of brought it into the 2000s, I suppose, with this movie. And, you know, one of the things that struck me so much was how much like, the quintessential, you know, George A. Romero zombie films. And then I found out that he was actually originally wrote the screenplay for the film and was ended up being rejected. So I was quite surprised when he, you know, I saw him on board. And actually I could see a lot of his work in the film.
Yeah, and particularly like when I get to the reviews, they actually do mention that. But yeah, so like when you think of zombie and you think, you know, George, pardon me, and you think George Romero and obviously his influence on zombie movies, you know, is still felt today. So I guess even if he wasn't that involved to begin with, you're still going to see the connection between George Romero and pretty much any zombie flick or show you see now.
Yeah, and he pretty much inspired the whole zombie look anyway, so yeah, I can see what you mean. But yeah, no, very much Day of the Dead it felt like to me from 1985. So, you know, the whole claustrophobia and the zombies in that sort of, you know, tight space. So yeah, no, so I saw the similarities there. So interesting.
But did Day of the Dead have zombie dogs? Because apparently those zombie dogs, the crew had a really hard time with the fake blood and the stuff that they were covering those dogs with. They had a super hard time in stopping the dogs from licking the effect makeup off themselves.
Oh, my God. And there were so many parts where there was, I think it looked like a sort of CGI version of them, and then there was the version, you know, with close-up. And it was just so jarring whenever you put them next to each other.
Yeah.
It would be made more funny if they were licking themselves as well. So, interesting fact there. Yeah, I've got in my notes here, creepy dog. So, yeah they definitely stood out for me as well.
Yeah, and that iconic scene just around at the trivia with Laura and the zombie dogs, like one of the most iconic scenes from this movie still. And anytime there's a mention of this movie, there's pretty much guaranteed they're going to show the scene where Alice basically runs up a wall and flings round to kick a zombie dog in the head. That was 3 months worth of training for Mila Jovovich to get that down pat. So she did that herself.
Oh, that's good. That's says a lot more, something a bit more impressive about her performance. So, yeah, that's interesting. But, yeah, I do know the scene you mean, and it is often referenced, I suppose, too, as the scene from the movie, because, yeah, coming to think of it, I had seen clips of that one before.
Oh, well, surprised if you hadn't. Like I said, it's a one that everyone focuses on anytime this movie is mentioned, and we've just done it ourselves. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We've given a whole section to the creepy dogs.
Yes. Well, before I can sense you creeping into the general discussion here, Christian.
And I know. It's a bit naughty, but I'm reining it in.
That's fine, and I'm surprised I actually managed to get this far this quickly, considering our usual performance. But it's time to set our baseline. It's time to dig up a review, to see where we're working from in an effort to redeem this movie. Now, this review is titled, I Just Wasted 2 Hours of My Life. I love the Resident Evil video games. I've been a fan since the first one was released in 1996. I love the storyline, the eerie soundtrack, the creepy sound effects, and of course, blowing the heads off The Walking Dead. When I heard they were making a film based on it with George Romero directing, I went unconscious. I was so excited and couldn't wait to see it. Then Mr. Romero was dropped from the project, and it was given to the biggest hack in Hollywood history, Paul W.S. Anderson. Besides the competent Mortal Kombat, yay, he has yet to make a film worthy of a one-week run at a dollar house. This movie was shameful from beginning to end, complete with faux Matrix action, cookie-cutter acting, void of any horror or suspense, and featuring CG that must have been made on a Tandy PC from 1988. He even trashed the storyline. There was no Red Creed nonsense in any of the games, and certainly no child hologram telling everyone they are going to die. And don't give me the excuse of it being camping on purpose, this movie failed on every possible level, including being one of those bad movies that never takes itself seriously and becomes a midnight cable classic. Anyone who likes this movie needs to see a George Romero film immediately. 1 star.
Oh, gosh. Oh, yes, there are some parts of that review that, yeah, I can kind of see. So, yeah, I don't want to give too much away. But, yeah, that actually was a big question that I had is what is the connection with the whole Red Queen thing? Because, you know, I'd know that from her name being Alice, and Alice in Wonderland, there's the whole Red Queen. And obviously I know it's, you know, using the hive and things like that. But I don't know what the go was with that. It stood out to me.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, it was like the White Queen who was in charge of the hive in the original computer game, which was set under a mansion in Raccoon City. Just setting the scene here, so that was kept quite faithful to the game. But then I guess, you know, having the lead character Alice heading on down, I suppose the Red Queen, they may have been trying to put a bit of a theme there. I can't say I got too much of an Alice in a Wonderland vibe from the movie. Especially since you don't even know the main character is called Alice, and it is not mentioned at any point in the entire movie, which, Christian, I just want to really stress this now, which, Christian, was only 100 minutes long, Christian. It wasn't 2 hours. 100 minutes.
I know.
And it didn't even have a big opening and closing credits to take up a lot of that time.
At least it had a bit of a voiceover. So, yeah, I'll pay you that as I madly jot down other movie ideas.
Yes. And yeah, the opening credit was quite short and sweet, and yeah, narrated on-screen exposition. Just really didn't worry about trying to set up the scene and do a big convoluted intro to it. It's just like, hey guys, this is Umbrella Corporation, they're bad, this is what they're doing, let's go.
Hey, in the modern world for movies, that's a great way to edit a film. So it worked too for me. I was quite surprised to have a credit sequence under 4 minutes.
And then, yeah, it doesn't waste any time at all. Shows a guy handling these vials of swirly liquid and goes to leave and throws the vial off and it breaks. It's like, okay, that's no time wasting in breaking of the sinister vial.
And then like you've got all this sort of stuff happening at the start, but then to me it felt like it was then, I don't know, once I'm skipping ahead a little bit, sorry. No, I'll let you continue, Trevor, and I'll come back in another bit.
No, that's fine. I mean, yeah, the whole opening segment where I suppose, you know, the text detection of the contaminant leak happens and everything gets locked down, including people getting stuck in a very big elevator. There was a lot of room in that lift. When it came to a jump, they all fell to the ground, they all had space on the floor, and there were a lot of people in that elevator. It was massive. But I can't help think that this computer that's trying to contain this biohazard spill that's happened due to this guy throwing away this vial is needlessly sadistic with some of the stuff it does, in which to, I suppose, try to neutralize the staff that are quickly becoming contaminated with this horrible virus. Is it necessary to forcibly decapitate one by controlling the lift when she's stuck halfway through the door trying to get out? Is that really necessary, Red Queen? Can't you just, like, eject some sort of sterilizing agent like you did with the ones that are banging at the front door?
Yeah. Oh, no. But yes, I know what you mean.
It's a very cheery start to this movie, really. Hey, look, here's all these people dying.
But then I felt, though, because we'd had such a frantic start as well, too, from pretty much there until what I've got here, the memory loss section, but the, you know, her sort of going into unconsciousness as such, it was from then that it started to take a long time to get into any action happening, which I felt, because I think that we'd had so much sort of happen in the first 5 minutes or, you know, probably even less than that it felt sort of hard to maintain that kind of pace further on. But that was just me anyway.
Yeah, so, yeah.
As soon as we got out of that opening section, because it was kind of, yeah, it was, I had to keep reminding myself to, so this could be a clever way that he was trying to sort of build tension as well with the film, like to give it that sort of, yeah, suspense angle that this guy said apparently it lacked. And but I did feel that sort of like 15 minutes in, I was then looking at my watch going, you know, this is taking a long time to kind of get into it. Okay, hurry up. You've established things considering those opening 5 minutes.
Yeah, that opening bit where, like after that, where it cuts to Mila waking up on the floor of a shower after obviously collapsing or something, you know, she's pulled the shower curtain down with her and obviously something has happened to her, and even though it's not immediately apparent that, you know, they've got the handy memory loss plot device happening with her as she gets up and the very video game inspired dress is waiting for her on the bed, and the combat boots to go with it, just to make sure she does look like a video game character when she is dressed, and walking around, and she goes outside going, hello, hello. I like when she steps outside, she goes, hello, at the door, and all the birds fly away. It's like, well, the birds don't want to say hello.
But, like, I assume that's what you touched on with the video game thing, and that's one thing that sort of stood out to me throughout the whole film, was its video game origins were really obvious. Like, for once, a movie that was a video game adaptation actually follows that whole sort of, you know, beginning to end of a combat, you know, as though you're playing the game. You know, it's a bit different to say something like Super Mario Brothers, where they try to add all this whole other little subplot in that doesn't really quite work and things like that, goes off on a tangent. It was really good to see this movie actually using a traditional sort of, yeah, like you were playing a game of it.
Yeah. I suppose, you've got the intro, the cinematic intro to set the scene. Then you've got your levels. You've got your initial discovery level. The soldiers burst in, giving that initial burst of action. They'll say hello to her. The birds won't, but the soldiers will come through the windows to say hello. And you find out the house has its very own train station underneath, which is also faithful to the games, by the way.
And that's, this is more stuff than, you're now telling me this that makes me sort of appreciate it in sort of a different light now, going, yeah, it really has nailed the whole video game adaptation in a way that these other movies really haven't, And I think, there's a lot of her sort of walking down the long corridors and who's going to jump out, just like, you would be playing in a video game. So, yeah, I'm sort of appreciating it in different eyes now.
Yeah, and I mean, as per a video game, a lot of the initial horror elements really are jump scares, It's like they head down there, they're walking past a flooded lab, a body floats up suddenly, and then as they walk past it, it opens its eyes really suddenly, and like the jarring music just sort of go boo, which again, when you're looking at scares in a video game, they do rely very much on jump scares.
Yeah, and it was like, that's what I felt like for the first sort of even first 30 minutes of the movie. There was a lot of these, that kind of thing, waiting for something to jump out. And I think the fact, too, that sort of they held off with the whole zombie stuff, obviously that wasn't early on. But, the whole time I'm kind of thinking, okay, what's the evil going to be? I was interested to see the form it was going to take. So that kind of added a bit of extra tension for me because I was anticipating what are they essentially looking for and what's eventually going to break down that door and come in and attack them, So that kind of did add a lot of suspense for me, not having played the video game.
Actually, I just realised that even before we got to the jump scares inside the hive, inside the big base under the mansion, there's a bit where Michelle Rodriguez goes down because they've got to fix the train. Some wires have become unplugged. No wondering why they become unplugged. And then, like, one of the other guys sticks his head down suddenly and she goes, oh, jumpy, are you? And then later on, this other dude comes, they pull this other dude through the door and this other guy goes, that guy goes, oh, jumpy, are you? It's like almost a direct reference to jump scares.
Yeah, oh god. But that's the thing, I'm sort of seeing it now as a bit more sort of tongue in cheek, but then the film isn't itself tongue in cheek. It's probably a good homage to the to the origin, or really making sure it's story right. And I assume what is done in the movie is sort of essentially the plot of the video game as well.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, as that review said earlier, it's not completely faithful, but I do think it's a bit more faithful than what that reviewer indicated. But I tell you what, though, one thing that is really handy both in movies and video games is when you have a character that's lost its memory, you can just have someone come to them to bring them up to speed. And like one of those soldiers that comes in there, I'm just going to call him Expendable Black Guy because that's essentially what he is. He doesn't last too long. But he goes to great length in really filling in the backstory between what we saw at the start of the movie where everyone got trapped after the chemical escaped and the point where they're taking Mila down, or Alice, either or, down towards the train. And they just stops. And he really takes his time to explain it clearly and quite extensively in a very expositional bit of dialogue.
Yeah, but it also felt like, too, by that stage of the movie that we kind of needed a bit of a, even though sort of to me it was a lot of build-up by that point, it needed almost that, okay, cool, you need some dialogue now and a bit of an explanation. Like, it felt like it was very formulaic in that respect. So, but yeah, at least, as you said, he did bring us up to speed, which is exactly what it was.
Yeah, and it wasn't like it was a dull, long-winded speech. He was a very serious character and he did it all in character. And I did appreciate that. Like, he was saying it like he meant it, which, good job you, dude, who's going to die very soon.
But yes, it's, you mentioned, I don't even know why I've got a certain note here. I'll have to come back to that. But the part two with the whole, you mentioned the zombie girl with you're going to die in here. It just actually recalled straight away that scene in The Exorcist where Linda Blair comes out and said, you're going to die up there. And I think it's a very often used quote in horror films, like a very similar kind of, to paraphrase it, sort of. So I felt that using that was almost like what you said, making a direct reference to those jump scares. So, yeah, that was a weird thing. But you said, and that review mentioned the zombie girl had nothing to do with the game. It was a totally new thing.
Oh, yeah, the holographic girl, the computer girl. The
holographic girl, yeah. Sorry, that's what I meant.
I'm thinking, zombie girl? Oh, no, okay.
Yeah, what version were you watching?
Yeah, did you get some sort of cut that I didn't get? I had the Blu-ray. What am I missing?
I think we watched the right one. So that starts talking to me about scenes I haven't seen.
but even before they got there, again, another sign of absolute, just unnecessary vindictiveness from this computer is, they make the way down. They can't open a door without sticking a gun through it when they do it, I noticed. It's like every door they open has got to be sticking a gun through it. And they finally get to the corridor, which leads to the Red Queen's chamber, or the central computer system. And most of the soldiers go in there, and there's a laser that comes down and slices through one of them, and then another laser comes down and slices through another one of them, and good old expositional yet doomed black dude, he manages to avoid it all until the last pass, where it just turns into just like a very fine laser grid that just slices through him, and probably the goriest. Even though it wasn't much way of the goal, but just as he started to fall apart, that was, you see that coming, you just go, ah, like, it was probably the first time that I really got the sense of a horror movie from this. I still remember the first time I saw that scene. So watching it this time, I mean, I knew it was happening, so it didn't have as much of an impact, but I still got some of that initial feeling just going, that is nasty. that is needlessly nasty for this.
And that's the thing about it. Yeah, that's the thing about this movie is you a lot of times, we keep saying horror, and I'm sure it's probably listed as a horror suspense action film or, you know, something along those lines. So, you know, it's moments like this that I am reminded that it's a horror film in some respects, but then, yeah, they're very few and far between, but there are some key things, yeah, like what you said with that scene too.
And then, yep, creepy kid CGI hologram that just looked so fake, but hey, it was a computer representation of the designer's daughter, so I'm sure he was very proud of his kid being represented by a sadistic and vindictive artificial intelligence. And the warning that you're going to die down here is, of course, we find out that when she gets turned off, it actually goes through a pan through other parts of the base that has been through, just showing all these red locking lights turning green, and it's just showing that all the stuff is unlocking and opening, which, you know, is just the start of their problems, really.
Yeah, and that's, again, you know, following on from the whole, you know, video game thing of, you know, having to follow a path from beginning to end, and yeah, it's, yeah, and it's very clever in that respect. Yeah, that's actually a good point to bring up. I noticed that too with the way that, you know, the format was with the whole, yeah, that they have this big path they have to follow, and it kind of possibly piqued my interest at that stage, because I was kind of going, hurry up, get into it.
I mean, the surviving soldiers, the ones who didn't go into the corridor, you know, they're waiting up in this warehouse full of these large containers that we know contain something creepy in there, because Mila had a look in and just went, oh, on the way down. and that's where we get our first zombie, who goes straight for Michelle Rodriguez. I wonder if she insisted that she actually be the first one to be attacked. You know, if you're so insistent on being in a Resident Evil movie, she just goes, I want to be the first person attacked and bitten. You know,
yeah.
Was that
the
something she asked for?
The first entire series now, so.
Sorry?
Because that's what you want. Sorry, what were you going to say? That's what she.
Yeah, well, is that what she specifically wanted? You know, it's hard to know. She was so keen to be in this movie.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that was a request of hers. You know, the first one of the entire series too. So it's probably kind of iconic in a way. So, but yeah, it was really good that it was like it's sort of obviously when we get our first glimpse of the zombies, and that was a really good. That was very reminiscent, obviously, as I said, of George A. Romero. But everything would be with zombies, as we said. Mm-hmm. But it was sort of at this stage when I realised, this is kind of going to become possibly a modern zombie epic. You know, with from then until the end of the movie. So, you know, but it just felt like it took such a while to get to that. But it was building suspense, and it did make me wonder what the evil was going to eventually take the form of. So, yeah, so it was good when these guys finally appeared.
But it wasn't really necessary to have the one dragon, the axe, so early in the piece. He didn't do anything with the axe, he just dragged it.
Yeah, but that was another thing, because it was like, you know, them also going, oh, let's put another really obvious horror movie cliche in there. So maybe it was then trying to be clever, but maybe not. Maybe it was just a weird choice.
But I want to know, like, even at this point, there have been plenty of zombie movies and zombie references. No one ever, ever, ever goes straight for the head in zombie movies, do they? They're always just, like, you know, they're shooting the leg or they're shooting through the chest. But, you know, just shoot the head. But, like, you know, they're threatening somebody else, they'll point their gun straight at their heads, but never at the zombies.
But it's like, oh, it's almost like, because it's into the 2000s now, they're kind of trying to sort of reinvent the, or maybe make up the rules as they go along for the contemporary zombie film. So yeah, they were taking a few changes to the formula, actually. So, but then, you know, very video game esque. So it seemed even more perfect.
But yeah, we have these zombies, a lot of cliched zombies, a few extra ones thrown in, a few nice shots of, you know, the inevitable people with bits missing from their face. But I found that a lot of the zombies were just like people with grey makeup. But then after they escape that and you see what's inside one of the containers and that CGI monster escapes and we get the look at it, again, that was another thing taken directly from the game, which was nice to see. It was a monster known as a licker in the Resident Evil game, even though I don't think they ever said what it was in this movie.
Yeah. Pretty weird name anyway, so it's probably glad they didn't use it.
It's got a big long tongue. That's why it's like...
Yeah, I know, but still, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just thinking something different. But yeah, I do love... Sorry, I'm sort of moving ahead a bit, but with the whole, yeah, her with the fork through the tongue. It's like, could they have played that for any more than they could have, you know?
Yeah.
I think that was a lot later in the movie, but sorry, yeah.
No, that's okay, and then... Yeah, that was very shortly followed by the, as mentioned early, the zombie dogs, which is another staple of the Resident Evil games. And I don't think there's a lot of stuff that actually has zombie dogs in there, to be honest with you. I don't remember seeing a lot of zombie dogs elsewhere.
And when you think about it, yeah, usually they're more like rabid dogs or something like that, but not, and I don't mean rabbit dogs, I mean rabid dogs.
Yep.
But yeah, not necessarily zombie ones. So that's, yeah, it could have been a first and possibly a last.
Yeah, well, they keep turning up in the games. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, but it's good. And that's why I wonder, too, yeah, the fact that we were saying, and I think even the first reviewer said, the whole fact that, you know, a lot of the CGI looked quite cheap. What did it say? Or it could have been created on something from 1985 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably, and I did notice that a lot with the dogs, I think we'd said earlier. And but yeah, I do wonder if that was also them reinforcing the sort of video game origins, because they kind of had that feel about them, you know, with the way they sort of ran off as well.
Yeah, I mean, because obviously, I mean, it was quite obvious that most of the shots were actual dogs. They used dogs in makeup effects, but then had to stop the dogs from eating the makeup effects. But yeah,
that would have been hilarious. I'd love to see the blooper reel.
Yeah, but when they actually did the close up and decided to say, hey, let's have one of them with half its face missing and big gaping holes in it, and that was CGI, it just really did not work well next to the practical ones that we had been seeing to that point.
And I do also wonder what CGI was like in 2002, thinking back to it, but I'm sure it was much better than what that was. But, you know, so I'm sure there would have been a lot more improvements as the series has gone on, the Resident Evil movies.
I think that's a safe bet. But one thing I did have to laugh at in that scene, because, I mean, all the way through the movie, there's various umbrella references with regards to the company that owns the Hive, like... when Mila Jovovich takes off her wedding band, inside it is engraved property of Umbrella Corp. And then, like, they, for some reason, when she pulls out a gun and shoots down some of these zombie dogs, it has to have one slow pan shot of following a bullet casing to the ground. And as it bounces off the ground, you see engraved on the back of the bullet, property of Umbrella.
So. Yeah, it was like, and then you'd always have this, yeah, and then that's what I remember now when I've got camera screens written down here. Yeah, whenever you flash up the camera screen, you know, they're reinforcing that logo all the time. So, you know, I thought that was good, and I did love the camera screens too, you know, like the use of that as well too, with the, I don't know, that was very video game-esque as well.
It made me wonder, like, because so quickly after that is when that iconic jump on the wall and turn around and do the flip kick, which is just a spectacular scene. It's probably one of the finest scenes in this movie, and is just a great action moment, no matter what you think of the movie. But I just found myself thinking, was that an Umbrella branded kick that she did there? Is that property of Umbrella Corp?
Oh, you know, this is now warranting a rewatch to pick up how many references. It's funny because there's actually a film distributor that I work with is Umbrella Entertainment, and they have pretty much exactly the same logo. So every time it flashed up, I was constantly being reminded it was a movie. But yeah, so I thought that was really interesting. But I suppose if you're calling yourself Umbrella, it's only going to look like a certain thing anytime you did a logo. So I can understand why. But yeah, I did like the clever use of it all the time. And I think if I did watch it again, I'd probably pick up on a lot more things like that.
Yeah, I'm sure there is plenty in there. But not long after that, again, like something which puzzled me and was never really explained, even though, again, it's a bit of a trope, I suppose, of the game where people get separated and you have to survive by yourself for a bit. And they all got separated. I couldn't understand why they didn't stick together. Suddenly, you've got two in one room, Mila off walking the corridors by herself, and another guy off somewhere else where he has to come running back in at some point. Why did you guys separate? Why did they separate? Did you see why they separated? Because I could not understand why suddenly they were scattered around this facility.
Oh, yeah, bizarre. But then, you know, the another thing that came to mind again, it was just one of those horror cliches. They had to get those people over there so that something could be done to them. And she had to be essentially the final girl, you know, walking these corridors for a little bit. But, yeah, I did think that was a strange thing to do, especially under the circumstances, you know, especially what had just happened as well.
And then when they finally do get back together, they take a break from all the action, so another character can just do a whole pile of expositional dialogue just to make sure that everybody's up to speed with the plot at that point.
Well, that's why I felt that the film was very empty in that respect, because, as I said, it took a lot to get into it, because you'd have a lot of filler, you'd have a lot of those action scenes, and then you'd have someone constantly repeating, or probably for people like me, to understand what the story is all the time, but it's probably worth them doing it. But yeah, so I felt that, yeah, there was a lot of filler, and perhaps it could have been a movie that was a little shorter, because it definitely, you know, not that I can talk about long movies, but anyway, that's another story.
Because, yeah, there was like this expositional thing where they're explaining why a character knew about the utility tunnels under the base that they could use to try to bypass all the zombies and the doors they could no longer get through. And that they headed down into the underground utility tunnels, which appeared to be raining in. I'm thinking that maybe the maintenance of the water pipes in this place was not up to a very high standard.
Yeah, maybe a lot of thought went into this set design, you know. Yeah, we've got to have to think about the things like the broken water main, so you never know. But yeah, that is an interesting thing when you're seeing things like that happening.
But of course, they're in the tunnel, they're in a confined space with no escape. What happens? Zombie horde!
Oh, but then that was like, you know, those were the moments that kind of, yeah, the whole claustrophobia, and it really works sort of in a suspense way, because, yeah, you were waiting for the next thing. Like, you knew something was going to happen, but I was sort of reminded of, I may be thinking of the wrong movies here, but that's, was it Dracula 3000, Dracula 2000 that we did a few months ago, which was set in space, where there was very claustrophobic and a lot of corridors. It reminded me so much of that, just with the way it was filmed in that way. But hey, it helped add to the suspense, I suppose, if you want to call it that, or the tension.
Very true. But at that point, I was also wondering how many times Michelle Rodriguez was going to get bitten, because I'm pretty sure she gets bitten like another two or three times in that scene. And she just keeps on going.
It must have been something that she said to them about, guys, give me, I must be bitten first, I must be bitten a million times, you know. It's like she really, really was embracing being a part of the movie.
Yep, she just really wanted everything to happen to her.
Everything bad to happen to her.
good job, Michelle Rodriguez, even though, you know inevitably what's going to happen to her. But, you know, she certainly kept it going, except when she went blind at some point, but that was only temporary, just so she was unable to fire a bullet to save a dude.
It was almost like, yeah, I've got here a question mark next to that. It was like, literally like a video game, like someone's taken her, you know, she's not invincibility, but have taken away their, they lose a turn for a little bit and then the vision comes back. But yeah, that was quite strange because, yeah, but especially when, as you said, it affected the whole, the shooting of the pool host.
I'm just trying to think because I remember the guy that gets trapped, because of course one of them has to get trapped and has to I've gone blanking it, but he like did this one liner which was just so groan inducing. Something about, you know, you're gonna have to work for your meal. Yeah, good on you, dude.
I can't remember it offhand, but yeah, if it's anything as bad as that one.
I think that was pretty close. I think that was pretty close.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh. That one must have slipped me by.
Yeah, you let it slip you by, Christian. It was not a good one-liner.
Yeah. My brain has just blocked that.
Yeah, not really the best one-liner movie when it comes to action, I think, in this one. Then Mila has some sort of weird flashback where she can see what was happening just before the virus broke out. So it's like, hang on, are you saying that Mila Jovovich, Alice, who has been having flashbacks to events that happened to her before she lost her memory, suddenly has psychic powers?
Yeah, that is odd. And it's not like they needed to do another recap for our, I don't know, our minds. But yeah, that was quite strange that they did that. So I don't know what that was about. It was almost like she was putting into place the pieces of the puzzle were finally locking in. But yeah, it was like what you said. Why does she suddenly have psychic powers?
And it never gets mentioned again. It's just this one moment that happens in the middle of this movie, and nothing like it happens before or afterwards. I mean, I'm deliberately not thinking ahead to the other movies, let's put it this way, at this point. So yeah. If you look at this movie by itself, in isolation for the first time, that scene just comes from nowhere with no explanation and pretty much no payoff. Except that she realizes that they need to go into this lab because that's where the cure is for the disease.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just like really, really odd because they were saying that they had to find another way around. Oh, no, the cure's in there. We've got the cure. We can save Michelle Rodriguez from being bitten anymore.
Yeah, it's in her contract to be bitten another 5 times.
Yeah. And she's going, no, I need to be bitten more. And then they go in there and the bad guy is revealed via flashback.
Yeah, and then it's, and then we've got kind of, we're coming into our sort of climactic bit of the movie. But, you know, by then I was kind of getting, having lost sort of a bit of, quite a lot of interest. So, yeah, so it was hard for me to continue from here on. So, Trev, I might need your, clever recap skills for that as well. Because, yeah, by now I'm just like, oh. But I don't want to give away too much of my feelings yet.
Yep. I think we've glossed over some of the setup, so I may have to reference back. So it turns out Alice and the dude that was on the outside of the train were posing as a married couple as security in the mansion above the hive. But there's also flashbacks where it's obvious that they were taking their cover really, really seriously due to some brief flashbacks in for a bit of rumpy time. But then when you get to this point, the guy who was the pretend husband, who obviously has the other wedding ring that was property of Umbrella, is suddenly revealed to be the person who went in to steal the virus so he could sell it to the highest bidder on the black market, and was trying to escape on the train when they turned the train around and took it back and pulled him back inside. But he couldn't escape before the security defences that caused the amnesia in him and Alice took effect. But it was only when they got to that room and Alice had her magic psychic moment and he had his magic flashback that you realise, oh, the bad guy's been with them the whole time.
The whole time. Gee, they haven't used that in a movie before at all. Again, another cliche. And possibly, yeah, and definitely another horror movie cliche as well. So they had to have that something like that in there too.
Yep, so he escapes and promptly gets eaten by the bad CGI liquor that we've only seen a few times up to that point.
Yes.
It gets bigger after eating someone, Everybody else escapes, gets back on the train, but they can't escape because, oh no, the liquor starts busting into the train carriage, bursts in, Mila sticks a fork through its tongue, and it gets dragged along the train line and is suddenly flammable, and it bursts into flame.
And that scene was just so bizarre, but it was just like, but at the same time, it was like, are they going with sort of a campy fear with this? But hey, yeah, as you said, if that's the characters from the video game as well, it does make sense for them to look like that and to behave like that. So, yeah, but I did think it was quite funny. Her, of course, obvious thing, go for the tongue.
Mm-hmm. And Michelle Rodriguez, you think she's dead. Miller's getting ready to shoot her in the head because they've worked out by this point that you shoot the zombies in the head. And she's not dead until they're trying to deal with the liquor, where suddenly she's back, she's died, and she's back as a zombie. Because, yeah, and to deal with her and Prince Button at the same time. I did actually find it quite a nifty little scene where they've got to get to this release button so they can drop the liquor onto the train tracks. But Michelle Rodriguez is between the surviving dude and the button, so he shoots her in the head. And the recoil pushes her back onto the button. It's just like, okay, yeah, I'll pay that. That was actually kind of cool.
Yeah, that's a pretty clever setup when you think about it. So, yeah, we will pay that one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so at least she came in handy there. So, hey, she probably even had a say in her pushing the button as well.
You see, I want to end up a zombie, but I also want to help to save the day in some way.
Yeah, okay, exactly. Well, I don't want to be a bad person.
Yeah. And then just to set up another reference to the actual games, when surviving dude, I don't remember any of the characters' names, I've got to say. They were just like...
Oh, God. Thank God I'm not the only one. I was worried that I was just sick in that respect. But, yeah, no, they don't seem to mention them except for, obviously, when you're trying to match it up on IMDb or something.
Yeah, I remember Alice because I know that's the name of the main character throughout the series and played by Mila. Everybody else is kind of like generic soldier dude, generic scientist dude, generic person trying to reveal the secret of Umbrella to the world dude, who's the surviving dude. But he gets scratched by the liquor, so when they get out in the nick of time with like a second to spare, and they walk into a wall of people in hazmat suits and they realize that where this guy has been scratched, it's all bubbling up and moving and these bits are coming out of it, and they just go, oh, take him, he'll be great for the Nemesis program, which is a direct reference, because the third game in the series is called Resident Evil Nemesis, about this creature that's got this huge bulky shoulder on one side and this giant mutated arm. The entire thing's mutated, but it's like a direct reference to that.
Oh, that's good. So, so there would be a lot, reference within the whole series if you haven't seen them. But we don't want to mention the other movies, but you have got me intrigued now how they all link in.
Well, I said that's more the game series than the movie series. As well.
Yeah, game series. So it's pretty much the movie series, has it pretty much followed the game sort of subtitles and things like that, or is it more sort of been like, you know, the sequels? I suppose, no, I shouldn't be talking about them.
No, it's safe to say that as the movies progressed, they got further and further away from the games.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So me sort of praising the whole video game formula and how I sort of, you know, I didn't mind that part of it is... it's probably something I should favour because, it wouldn't hang on to that for too much longer.
I think, you know, a lot of the tropes are still there, but you know, actually trying to directly reference the games kind of goes by the wayside after a bit. But then back to the movie. So they get, you know, Mila wakes up pretty much nude in the hospital room, tied to all these wires after being taken there from these guys. The place is deserted. And she makes her way out into Raccoon City, where everything is just completely trashed. There's a headline on a newspaper saying the dead are walking, which I believe is almost a... the dead walk, that was it, which I believe is pretty much a direct tribute to George Romero's Day of the Dead.
Yeah, definitely.
And they zoom out on this devastated city and then fade off into the sequel, I mean the credits.
Yeah, well, that's the big thing about it is, like, you know, obviously we know that there's sequels to it, but at that stage, she would already had that feeling that this was just setting it up for a very big continuing story, and it's kind of, you know, like, I would be interested to see what happens next, but I'm not necessarily going to watch the movies unless it is recommended by you for a future podcast. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with that.
Would I pick an ongoing movie franchise and make you watch the sequels? When have I done that to you, Christian? Honestly.
Oh, yeah, I would never. I couldn't think of it. So yeah, let's see what ends up happening with that. Mm-hmm. So I may end up seeing them yet.
I think we'll space them out. Though. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, good idea.
I'll tell you what, though, yet another time when watching the movie to the very, very end was an issue, because I tell you what, that music and the song over the closing credits, it's just terrible. It was just awful music song thing. I'm thinking, just finish. I think it was like two songs. And the closing credits didn't go for that long.
Because I think one was the one that played in the start of the movie, and then they replayed one, and then it was a totally new one. But yeah, I was even thinking, like what I do think with every time we watch credits, going, oh, Trevor, why do we have to watch this to the end?
Yeah.
But anyway, at least it could have had a payoff or something at the end, you know, as a last little, what's the term you use for it?
After the credit? The stinger, a little stinger or a little post-credit scene, but no, that really wasn't done back in the early 2000s, was it? It seems to be a very very much a more recent thing, even though, I mean, Ferris Bueller did it back in 1985, but yeah, it didn't really become commonplace until more recently.
Yeah, good point. So yeah, stinger, I've forgotten that term.
Well, yet again, we've started talking about the closing credits and going into detail about the music, so I think we may have finished our general discussion about this movie.
Yes. I have been struggling to find stuff to talk about. You might find I've been a bit quiet for this one because, yeah, there has been some interesting parts of this movie for me and some parts where I'm just like, oh, what the hell? So, yeah. So I'd be interested to hear. Yep. I don't want to go too far into it yet.
Yeah, well, I think it's time to talk about those redeeming, irredeemable factors and whether or not this movie is overall redeemable. Now, I did pick it, Christian, so after you.
Oh, thank you. Actually, no thank you. Look, I think a lot to do with this film for me was, you know, obviously going into it completely knowing nothing about the film series or the video game series. So, you know, I was, yeah, essentially, I'm sort of very much turned off by that sort of, you know, contemporary action type film. They're not my kind of things. And the fact, too, that, you know, even though I've fondly spoken of the zombie films tonight, I'm not a big zombie film fan. And I think, you know, even though it was good seeing the zombies for the first time, I felt from then on, I'm like, oh, it's just a, you know, it's just a zombie movie. You know, like they usually sort of lose my interest a lot. It took a long time to sort of build up. And I honestly couldn't wait for the ending of it, Trevor. I don't know what it was like. Look, I don't know what any nicer way of saying it than that. But then, you know, like I said, you know, something hit me kind of halfway through where I'm going, aha, this is like a thing that we see commonplace now with, you know, I think they did it a lot with, was it Hunger Games or, you know, a lot of the series where the first movie is essentially just a setup movie, which is, you know, actually even Deadpool was a great example of it. It was really using that whole backstory for the first movie so that then, you know, we can just get straight into it for the sequels. So when it sort of, you know, struck me and sort of hit me that it's really, you know, this is part one of a series, even though they might not have been thinking so at the time, you know, it sort of made me sort of maybe appreciate it in a different way and sort of look at it more in that sort of video game format that I suppose, I mean, speaking about nonstop throughout this. Now, as I said, I'm not really into zombie movies, so it probably doesn't really help with my, you know, interpretation. But look, it got to a stage where I had to have a break and my friend said to me, you know, how's the movie going so far? And I said, to be honest, it's shit boring. And he goes, make sure you say that in the redeeming features. Sorry that I have to use those words, Trevor, but I tried so hard. It just felt like, you know, you had this really big 5-minute setup after a really short credit sequence, and then the whole walking down corridors, waiting for it to build up, waiting for something. It just felt so very middle of the road to me, very, very average. And I wouldn't say shit boring throughout the whole thing. As I said, it picked up a lot more when the zombies came in, but no, for me it was just a bit meh. And I would be actually intrigued to see the sequels, because now that they've got over that kind of setup period, and considering they did set it up quite a few times. So, Trevor, I'm going to have to say that in my end, and it might be being a zombie film hate non-liker, but I'm going to have to say it's irredeemable on my end. I hate to not be able to break the drought with that.
That is fine, and you got nothing to apologize, because I found myself thinking, I had fond memories of this movie, and I don't know if it was just like seeing it for the first time and seeing that video game stuff carry over and seeing the good moments for the first time helped carry these fond memories forward, but I'm thinking that maybe it wasn't a good idea for to revisit this one, because it didn't really live up to the expectations I had for it. I was quite excited to watch it, and then it's like, okay. There was just so much exposition, because as you said, there's a big tracks where really not a lot happens, and there's nothing there to really drive the plot along, so they've actually got to pretty much pause everything happens in the movie so someone can actually explain what's going on. As I said before, there were some very cool moments, you know, the famous wall kick, the laser grid scene, the fight with the liquor in the train carriage, you know, they were, you know, fairly cool moments. The attempted one-liners largely fell flat. But, you know, with those, the scares, which I'll put in quotes, were downright predictable, and yeah, there were great tracks of this where you think they're not having anything happen to help build suspense, but really it's just nothing's happening, and there doesn't seem to be much to build suspense whilst nothing's happening. I think even for 2002, those visual effects were pretty ropey. But look, when you look at this, I suppose, and compare it to other video game to movie adaptations, in that respect, it kind of has enough to make it enjoyable, and for fans of the game, even though, you know, it's not identical, you know, there are plenty of references to keep fans of the game happy, and I think, like myself, I mean, I've never been a big Resident Evil fan, but like myself, I think when I first watched it, those moments helped it bring it up. So if you're looking for something that is a decent video game to movie adaptation, in some respects you can consider that Resident Evil could be a choice to do that. On the whole though, as a zombie action movie, it's been done so much better before and since, and it's really got too many dodgy moments and just too many flat boring scenes and sequences, and so for that it falls below the line, and as much as it pains me to say this, it's not redeemable. It just doesn't make it.
Oh, it's interesting, Trevor, because I thought you'd actually be giving it a redeemable, so I was actually feeling a bit guilty that I'd have to give it a bad mark. So, but we obviously see it through the same eyes.
I wanted to say it was redeemable, but I've got to be honest, you know, it just doesn't bring it up enough. I mean, look, because the actual game itself has got great sections where you're just walking around corridors and discovering stuff, which is fine for a game where you're trying to explain what's going on through the environment and through finding things that give you clues, which obviously isn't an option for a movie, and all they can do is walk around a corridor until something happens. Like I said, I'll give it brownie points for trying hard to reference the game and bring some of that stuff over, but yeah, it's just not a good movie at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And it's too dull. So there we go.
There we go. Irredeemable all round.
Irredeemable all round. Or is it? Does this movie have its fans? And I think I've got an answer to that question right here in front of me. I've dug up another review. The title is Sci-Fi Success. Resident Evil is one of the scariest sci-fi films that my girlfriend and I had ever seen. It was full of gore and excitement that made you jump off your seat. Unlike many other films that are based on a game, Resident Evil had a plot that made sense. My girlfriend and I gave this movie 2 thumbs up for the reason that just as it started, they didn't waste too much time in getting into the action. We really can't wait until there's a sequel, because it sure left us hanging for more action. Please go see it, and we do promise you that you won't regret paying for it. 5 stars. From someone who's really easily pleased.
Yeah, especially with the whole, like, the scariest, and the mention of the gore so much is quite baffling. But anyway, each to their own, I suppose.
I think this is someone's first horror movie. Anyway.
Yeah. or they're used to much older ones where they're not, you know, relying more on tension possibly than just straight out scares. But anyway, so as you said, there's got to be fans of something out there for everything. So,
yeah, I made the mistake of rewatching it. I could have stayed a fan. I could have stayed a fan, Christian. I could have.
I know, but hey, you had to do it. You have to see it in those eyes, you know, and that kind of, yeah. I mean, I know that's what I've had to do with a lot of these films. It's like seeing it through the Rufus Project podcast eyes, you know, and you start to see these films in a very different light, especially when you do revisit them. And I know I felt that recently with Toys. So
I was about to mention that, yeah.
yeah. Damn, what was I thinking? How weird. Maybe a pre-20-year-old or maybe a teenage Christian was just a lot different. So it's always interesting to look at it again, a movie.
Yet again, we have not been able to redeem a movie. Are we going to be able to get something that will get us over that line? We are about to have a break. If you listened last week, we talked a lot about B-movies live, and I did mention that we are going to take May off as a mid-season break, so Christian and I can really focus on doing that show. And just like we started the whole Rufus Project season with a suggestion from somebody, we received a suggestion on our Facebook page from Leo in Boston, which was great to get, and I've told him that, yeah, we definitely need to do this movie, because Christian, he gets the redeeming features. There's no doubt about it.
Awesome.
So he's come and suggested the 1996 movie Mary Riley as our next redeeming features. And I think it'd be the perfect one to come back from the break with.
Yeah, a movie I would never have not thought of. I vaguely remember it coming out, and I think it's got Julia Roberts in it, but I think that's probably about all I know about it. And I don't think it's a movie that you and I would have ever have chosen, so I think it's good to have a fresh set of eyes, actually, for a movie. So I think I'm up for the challenge.
Yeah, I mean, and it's perfect. It had a big budget. It was a huge flop. It's rated above average on IMDb, which kind of indicates that, you know, it probably was critically panned, but has its fans that are pushing that rating up. It's full of people who you think would know better than to appear in a bad movie. You've got Julia Roberts, you've got John Malkovich, you've got Glenn Close, Michael Sheen, just to name a few. So when it comes to redeeming features movies, this one ticks a lot of the boxes that we normally look at when we're picking a movie. And apparently Julia Roberts actually got nominated for a Razzie for her performance as the lead character with allegedly one of the worst Irish accents ever recorded in a movie.
Oh, gosh. That just sounds like it's going to be a corker, and I'm hoping that Leo will be able to tune into and see if he shares his views and whether we can redeem it or not.
He basically said, try to redeem this movie.
Try. Well, Leo, we will try our absolute hardest, like we always do here. So, yeah, I'm up for the challenge, and I'm sure Trevor is too.
Absolutely. So, and if anyone out there, if you have any comments, do you think we've been too harsh on Resident Evil? Do you think we've been too generous? Let us know. You can also leave us your comments and your thoughts on Mary Riley. If you have any redeeming features, you've actually got a bit of extra time to get those to us, and we would love to include that in our next podcast. And of course, if, like Leo, you have any suggestions, we would love to hear them too. It's super duper easy to get in touch with us. You can head to our homepage, rufusproject.com, and leave a comment below this very podcast. You can send us an email to therufusproject@gmail.com. You can find The Rufus Project on Twitter or Facebook. You could even, if you want to, you could even spam Christian's Facebook page, Christian Fletcher Events, with suggestions there and reference back to The Rufus Project. So that's just how we get a few more hits. Come on, guys. Let's spam Christian's feed. I'm sure he won't mind. Will you?
Oh, no way. No, at all. I don't mind at all. No worries. And I'm always up for some suggestions too. So yeah, definitely. There's some other listeners like Leo out there that's got some ideas. Yeah, we're always up for a challenge. We'll consider any movie, well, within reason.
Absolutely. So like we said, we've just got the mini podcast next week, and then we will be taking that break for May, but we'll be coming back hopefully strong and with whatever we can make of Mary Reilly. I'm not going to make any promises as to how that's going to end up because I still haven't watched it. So I've got absolutely no idea. I'm going into this one blind and I'm thinking that that is actually a good thing.
You never know. It could actually turn us blind. So yeah, I'm much the same, Trevor, coming in knowing absolutely nothing except that Julia Roberts is in it with apparently a bad Irish accent. So that's where we'll head in.
Well, and Christian, thank you as always. I may have been disappointed rewatching Resident Evil, but I'm certainly not disappointed from our chat. It, as always, has been great.
Oh, thanks, Trevor, and thanks for, thanks for recommending Resident Evil, but yeah, we digress. There's plenty more things out there that we can hopefully redeem soon. So, as always, Trev, definitely a pleasure. So, I look forward to chatting for the next one.
And see you then.
See you later.
Too good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? Got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. IMDb says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.